Welcome to another episode of the Valley Film Festival at Cinegear Expo. This is unfortunately our last one because as of 6 minutes ago, the exhibit hall is closed, but we are doing a pirate session right now.
They don't with know.
My good friend, Mario Garcia-Duenas.
Happy to be here.
So, Mario, you are a talented director of photography, camera
Love
guy.
It.
And and a good friend. So
definitely a good friend.
Yes. I get the homie rate.
Definitely.
Except when I have a budget. Then
don't
I gotta
tell people
then
there's
I gotta
such a
give
thing
you
as a homie rate.
It's like $5 off.
You know. Gotta make those 10K a day, you know?
Yeah, right. So you were not most of our interviews have been with we talked to Tracy, the festival director, and I think everyone else was alumni, and you haven't been a part of the Valley Film Festival yet, but I wanted to bring you in because of your experience with various size crews,
right,
as a DP, as an AC, you know, just being on sets. And I'm sure that you've seen both well-run sets.
Yes.
And you've seen some not well-run
right,
sets.
Right, right. Yeah, everything from three kids in a tripod on a film school thing all the way up to a union feature, you know, with A-list actors and whatnot. So everything in between as well, obviously.
So, I mean, let's just kind of start out. And what are some... When you get brought onto a project, what's a red flag for you that you see it happen and you're like, oh, this isn't going to go well?
Oh, boy, there are so many. Poorly formatted script.
Oh.
That's, like, off the top. Because the first thing I'm going to get is a script. If I get the script and it doesn't have, like scene headings or, like, scene numbers, I'm like, oh, this is not a great idea, you know? Or, like, tons of supers, lots of action with, like, poorly written dialogue. Lots of dialogue, poorly written dialogue with no action, bad transitions. Those are kind of like just off the script. I can kind of tell like kind of what I'm getting into. It's another red flag. I guess like if the script say it's good and then we're moving forward. All right, so like, well, what's your budget? Well, what's your budget? Well, what's your rate? Well, what's your budget? And playing that game.
Didn't
like,
I send you a
you did,
an Instagram
was,
reel
yes,
about that
really
where
funny.
They're like a showdown it's in the come, Wild West?
What's your,
your
rate?
Budget?
What's your budget?
It's like, you know, okay, $1,000 a day.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
So right, and that's right. So like, I, potentially a red flag in terms of that would be because like, listen, if I know the person, like 9 out of 10 times, they'll be super friendly. They'll be like, yeah, listen, I don't have a ton of money. I really want to do this. Are you interested in doing it? Here's how much I can pay you. Then I get to decide. Yeah. You know, yes, it's you know, it's well below my rate, but I'll do it. Or like, no, that's actually yeah, totally fine. Or it's on my rate or whatever. A green flag and the exact opposite thing is whenever they hit me up, like, what's your rate? And I give my rate, like, great, let's move forward. That's a yeah, good thing.
I know I hit you up for some stuff where I'm like, I'm trying to budget.
Yeah,
I need to know how much it'll cost to find out if I can even do the project.
And the thing is, that's not even a red flag for me so much. When people are upfront, that's less of a red flag. It's whenever people are like, yeah, man, we have this great idea and it's going to be awesome. They have like 38-page script for like a short film. And they're like, so we have 2 Black Magics and my buddy Johnny and Tommy are going to help us out with lighting. And like... And like I'm like, yo, man, I'd love to bring an AC or a gaffer. Like, I have 3 gaffers for you, and I'm like, and like my buddy Tommy and Joe, they're gonna like, they're gonna be your AC. They're like, they'll name like 6 people that are all of a sudden my ACs. I'm like, bro, you don't even know like what these positions mean. You know, like that's a huge red flag for me because if like you don't know the structure of the set, even right, if you can't afford the structure of the set, like that's fine. It's fine to not have, but it's fine to not know.
Yeah.
But to not to like have this like grandiose crazy idea and like because generally whenever you hear that the next thing out of their mouth is like we're trying to do this whole feature for like $5,000
right.
You're like bro what and it's like man that is a toughie and don't get me wrong I've done features for like $15K before I did a feature for $15K before and it was brutal it was absolutely
our last,
brutal
interview was with they had done a feature and it was about $15K
yeah,
that they spent on it.
And what ended up working on my end is that, like, I got a lot of college students that were, like, about to graduate, that were literally donating their time for free. They were really wanting to learn. And, like, whenever you have people that are willing to do all this, it's not my buddies that are coming to help. It's like, no, this is, like, you know, my friends from film school that are about to graduate. And, like, they kind of already know and they're interested. And I know they're going to be passionate about it, not just
and
there
and
to help out or
they
whatever.
They are in the situation where exposure, well, not exposure, but experience
exactly,
would help
they,
them.
Exactly, and they get to build up on. I mean, I've definitely...
There's a difference between a producer saying, this will be great experience for you versus...
Exactly. My friend Rebecca Roomfort, it's a great example of somebody that like just came onto the set, and I was like, we can pay you like $150, and it's like for 3 weeks. And she's like, I just got to LA, baby. Let's do whatever. Let's go. And like she learned a ton from that, and she ended up, in the future, I ended up hiring her as my AC a bunch of times. So that is a great example of like some, the kind of people that like you should that is the kind of green light on a red light situation, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, or green flag on a red flag situation. Like, you know, okay, not a lot of money, not a ton of crew, not a blah blah blah. But everyone it like gives a shit. Wow, okay. Or gives, you know, they care, pardon my language. That's a green flag. That's a green flag on an otherwise red flag. So yeah, what's another red flag for me? No breakfast in the morning. No, I'm kidding. No, honestly, those are really like my big red flags. I feel like anything moving forward tends to be smoother. Mm-hmm. I think, mostly because I mean, there's like a mountain of other red flags I could say, but if you're on a budget, I'm trying to think how to explain it. If I'm, for example, on like a union set. And my other red flags come up, like that is super sus, and I'm definitely not working the project. But if I know kind of what I'm getting into, you know, and that kind of stuff, and we've crossed those initial red flags, and they're not a big deal.
Right.
All the other red flags are gonna be stuff like, well, if I'm on a union set and lunch is sandwiches, I'm like, yo, what, you know? Even if it's not a union set, but like a decent budget set, I'm like, yo, that is not okay. Like that is not okay. Because I know, especially day one, right? Because if that's day one, what are we gonna be eating day four?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Whereas if I know I'm on an indie shoot, like with the homies, and it's like the, you know, the homie job, whatever, and I like, you know what I'm saying? Like we had Sanders Day One, whatever, like that's what we're eating. It's fine. I know what I got into. So that's kind of what I'm saying. Like you don't really see that red flag until you get there type
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. Sometimes you can never know. Once you get there, it's completely different.
Lack of organization is like, so getting a call sheet, like inside of 12 hours from shoot, inside of 12 hours from call, like that is, it's a big no-no. This happens a lot, in particular with music videos, but like, alrighty guys, the shoot's tomorrow at 9 a.m. Here's the address. See you later. That's your call sheet. It's a phone text. And you're like, bro, what did I just sign up for? And that happens with music videos so much. And I'm not talking little music videos. I've done some big music videos, well-known artists where I was like key grip on and the gaffer texted me the call sheet. And I was like, what? And it's at a big studio and like with a big name artist. And you're like, what in the freaking world is this?
Is that a fault of the producer or is that?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's a big faux pas on the producer's end. And definitely a red flag because 9 out of 10 times when that happens, you know your check is going to be maybe net 30.
Oh,
maybe net 30 if you get paid.
I remember working a project and it was... It was a corporate client,
right.
You know, and I was coming in just as a second camera, you know, helping out, you know, the guy that was shooting it that actually worked for them on
right.
a contract. And I'm like waiting for the check. I'm like, dude, where's the check? They're like, oh, we pay net 90. And I'm like,
90?
Excuse me. Hey. No, you don't. I did not extend those terms to you.
Nah.
In fact, you accepted my invoice that said due on receipt.
Yeah.
You know,
so
we got to fix it. And I just ended up having to wait, but then they never sent the check out.
Well,
and then, I mean, there's all these issues that, and this is a major, it was a hair company.
Right.
You know, like a major, you know, hair company.
I mean, technically, that's illegal. Technically, after net 30, you can actually take them to the labor board and they have to pay you overtime on every day, on every single day that they have not paid you since you're net 30.
Yeah. Well, I think. Part of it
like
was
by law,
because
have
it
to
was billed by my company because I've got a C corp.
It still doesn't
a
matter.
Bit,
they have to,
but still, it was they were definitely pushing things.
If the initial deal memo doesn't say anything beyond net 30, every day after 30 days, you can charge overtime on.
Yeah,
like
they
full
basically
rate overtime.
Just treated me like every one of their other vendors, and I'm like, you know, it's like I had to go through this, and then the person who hired me was so apologetic because he's like, I had no idea this was going to happen.
Right.
And I'm like, well, this is not going to happen again. Like, right. You know.
Yeah, and no, it's definitely not going to.
So.
You're going to put pen to paper to make sure this doesn't happen
right,
again.
You're either going to pay me in advance or you're going to. Mm-hmm.
Full payment or, yeah, or find someone else.
Yeah, or find someone else. Like, yeah, I appreciated the work. I wanted it to lead to more.
I am not the op you're looking for.
Right. What is something that you really wish every director you worked with would do?
Know what they want.
And is that in terms of them doing storyboards or just having a vision?
No, just having a clue of what they want. It's so one of the most frustrating things is whenever you practice everything, plan everything, you have the storyboard, you show up on set and they're like, oh, I had a completely different vision. Then why did you wait? Why did you waste like 3 weeks of prep time of my life paying me, you know, like half rate on already reduced rate or no rate in some instances in like indie jobs? And like, why did we do all of this if we're like basically just shooting a documentary all of a sudden?
Yeah,
that's super frustrating. And fortunately, I work much less with directors like that now. Starting on, you gotta just a DP, you gotta just take whatever you can get. Oh, you want me to direct your movie? Let's go. But fortunately, I'm at a place now where I can like, when I see those signs off the top, I'm like, I don't know if I'm the right DP for you. So definitely knowing what they want. What else do I wish the directors?
Well, on the flip side of that, though, I remember in some of our early conversations for my feature, you know, you talked about also liking having input.
Oh, completely. Yeah, 100%. I definitely want to have input. I like having that input in preparation. The way I look at it is like the meat and potatoes, right? Like, if you eat all the, you can eat all the potatoes, but if you don't have meat, you don't have the story, right? So, like, we sit down and we storyboard so that we can have the meat. So when we get to set, we shoot the meat. And if we do it right, we will get done ahead of schedule, which allows us to have the freedom to then play around. Because now we have a basis of, like, this is the story. How can we enhance the story? Instead of doing a lot of enhancement for a story, we might not end up getting it all. So, for me, it's very important we get the meat of the story. Because I think of it as differently than I think a few DPs out there. I'm not going to say a lot. And there's a lot of good DPs that don't think of it the way I do. But to me, it's more important to tell the story well and for my cinematography to not necessarily call attention to itself. Like, yes, everybody wants pretty cinematography. And I'm aware that's part of my job. But in the end, my real job is to tell the story visually.
Yeah.
You know, and so if, like, I get an amazingly pretty shot followed by an amazingly pretty shot, but they completely contradict what the actual story is supposed to be doing. You know, like, am I really doing my job? Not so much. So for me, I value more focusing on telling the story. And you can't do that unless you have the meat and you have the setup and you do the storyboarding and you collaborate with the director and you guys have an idea of what you're doing so that when you get there, then you can just mess around.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where you go, because there's going to be inspiration on set, hopefully. I mean,
ideally.
If you never have inspiration on
set, absolutely.
You're on the wrong set.
Completely,
you're
completely.
On the wrong project.
And that's what having a game plan gives you, is the opportunity to just run off and do the cool, crazy thing you just thought of about on set. You know, because you know in the end, you're going to have a story.
Yeah. The last interview, we were also talking a little bit about, you know, the fact that, I mean, there's obviously a huge difference. You're running on the Red Komodo, right?
Right.
You know, but, I mean, if you're on a budget, you can shoot on this iPhone, you know?
You can.
Yeah. You know.
But I have really good lighting, though.
I think that...
I have pitched shooting on cell phones before.
I think that if I were to shoot something... Now, I actually think I'm you know, pretty decent at shooting, but I still think if I were to shoot something with your camera and I were to give you my phone... I think you'd probably come up with something better than me.
I mean, I don't know. Definitely I've seen people use Alexas and make them look like cell phones.
Right.
I don't know necessarily a cell phone would be better than a Komodo. If you're exposing it correctly and all that stuff. To some regard, yeah, it's not necessarily... Not every camera is right for every project. You know, sometimes you do need, like a big reason why I would shoot on a Red over an Alexa, for example, in a situation is we're having a ton of post effects and there's like a lot of like spinning of frames and stuff like that. I want that extra resolution and I want that extra room. I want to be able to shoot a little wider so that like whenever we get to post, we have that room to tinker with it.
The punch in.
Exactly, and... exactly. Where, like, a good example, it's a music video that we did, Ocean Park, with a band called Ocean Park Standoff. I was a gaffer on it, actually, so I wasn't even, like... But I realized the DP, I know, they always shoot on Alexa, always shoot on Alexa. This one, they shot it on the Helium at the time. Helium, pretty sure, the 8K one.
Okay.
It's, like, from the DSMC2 bodies. They shot it on that specifically because there's a part where, like, the frame literally does this and then does that and then does this, and it's unsteady while it's moving backwards. And granted, you can do it on the steady, but they wanted to lock it in motion, track it to the eyes. Now you can do it on a freaking filter on your phone, you know, like,
right.
The whole, like, check my eyes and I'm going to move and the frame moves with me. At the time, that didn't exist, so they needed that room to do that. And that's the kind of stuff where, you know, like, an Alexa, it can get you there, but there's better cameras for that.
Well, I mean, there's even, like, a lot of... I know a lot of people like the Alexa because of the highlight roll-off.
Yes. The skin tones, the highlight roll-off, and the shadow follow.
And while it won't get you exactly there, I know there are people that they've made a LUT for the GH5 to make the GH5 look as close to the Alexa as they can. It gives them this, you know, very similar roll-off.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to the amount of... The difference is that with an Alexa, if you expose it correctly and you shoot it well and you light it well, you don't really have to do a whole lot of tinkering in post. Whereas with almost any other camera, to get the Alexa look, you got to put the extra work. You got to really focus on the lighting. You got to really make sure you're not, you know,
right,
mixing on your skin tones. You got to know that when you get to post, you got to need to tinker with those skin tones. You got to know that you're going to need to, like, do some specialty stuff. It's a longer way to get to the same place, but you can still get to the same place. You know, it's...
Yeah.
That's the part where it's like, it's not the camera, it's a shooter.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, do you kind of see yourself staying, like, a DP role for your career? Or are you hoping to, like, move into, like, directing? Or?
I actually just got offered. I am working on getting the script heavily adjusted, but the bones of the story are pretty tasty. And I got offered originally to DP this feature. And as I read the script, I was like, I really like the story. If you're down to do these changes... I'd even be down to direct it. And I kind of pitched it as a silly joke or whatever. And she was like, yes, we don't have a director yet. So that would be amazing. She hired me as a DP because I'd worked with her before. She's like, would you really want to direct this? I'm like, yeah, but, like, if I'm going to direct, like, we need to change a lot of this stuff. And it's a Christian film, actually.
Okay.
Which that's the new for me. I've never done a Christian film before. But I was like, I really wanted to focus. It felt really preachy. And I didn't like that because, to me,
which is the problem. As a Christian, I hate Christian films because they're preaching.
Exactly. Listen, I'm Catholic. I go to church on Sundays, but I also go get drunk with my buddies on Fridays. You know, I may not be a great Catholic, but I still believe and love God, you know? So it's for me, like, the big thing is, if, like, the whole purpose of making this movie is to show people that, like, Christianity is awesome, why are you making them the bad guy? You know, like, I'm reading the script and every secular character in the movie is the bad guy. I'm like... That may be, like, accurate to your story, but how about we make some of the good guys? Maybe let's make them secular, you know, because you need this to be relatable, right? The point of it is to bring people into Christianity, into, you know, in my case, Catholicism. It's like, you can't make them off the top the bad guy and then, like, preach to them that they're wrong for living their lives the way it is.
Right.
For one, because they're not. We're all human, you know, like, that's how God made us, you know?
You know, something that, you know, one of my pastors says a lot is, you know, and it's one of the fallacies that we as Christians tend to do is, you know, why would we expect non-Christians to act like Christians when half the time we don't even act like we're supposed to?
And then we stand on a pedestal and tell them that they're, you know, sucking at life.
Yeah, I mean, there's a difference between, you know, basically... what's the word I'm looking for? Not codify, but you know, like, encourage.
Right.
You know, what we see as a sin, and not just acknowledge it, but to approve it. There's a difference to approve and to just go, well,
acknowledge.
And go, well, of course they don't have the same, you know, convictions as me. They're not going to unless they become like me.
Right.
So. Yeah, you're right. And that needs to be filtering into the scripts. And I think that's probably why there's such a disconnect in a lot of the Christian films is because they don't understand how to, like, make it reality.
Yeah, make it reality is a perfect way to put it. It's a perfect way to put it. So I might end up directing if that happens. I don't know that I want to direct forever. The reason why directing kind of came around, originally in my head was because there was a lot of shots and a lot of sequences that in my head I'm like, this would look awesome and would work awesome if we shot it this way and cut it this way. But I don't really get a say on how we cut it as a DP.
Right.
You know, I can, you know, suggest and we plan it right and we plan it ahead and maybe I get lucky and we do it the way I think it should be done. Yeah. But in the end, it's not my cut. It's the director's.
Yeah.
And so
sometimes even if the director doesn't get the final cut,
right?
And it's so, the producer.
And so, yeah. And so like the frustrating thing for me was that. And so originally, because I was working with a lot of young directors, not bad ones by any means, that just had a different vision than I did, but I was just trying to get in the door. We didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things. And it frustrated me. I was like, you know what? The only way I'm going to get to shoot this sequence the way I want to shoot is if I'm the one directing it. But then I started working with directors that like understand themselves, that have a vision, that know what they want. And even when they don't know what they want, I love it when a director either knows what they want or they don't, and they accept that they don't, and they're like, you figure it out. I hired you to tell the story visually. Tell the story visually.
Well, and there should at least be a certain number of scenes that, you know, they know. Like, my feature, whenever we finally get to make that, there are certain scenes I have storyboarded in my head right now.
Completely.
And it may turn out different, but I've got like how
you
I
have
want
the
to do it.
Exactly.
But then there's others that I'm like, I don't know how I want to shoot this, but we'll tackle that in storyboarding first, because we're going to have to go through
right.
That. Unless if it's a 100%. Super simple, you know, shot type of thing. No. But, you know, it's...
I did a short recently with a director that, you know, I'm Christian York.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So we just did a short together. I don't know how likely it is that we'll necessarily work together again. I think everything leading to the short was a little bumpy. I really enjoyed working with him. I think he's a great kid, you know, like great guy. Sorry, he's a freaking adult and I'm calling him a kid. I had a great time, honestly. But you know, there was a little bit of bumping and stuff. But one of the cool things that I did enjoy about it is that off the top, like when we were doing like the storyboard and all that stuff, he's like, so here's the shots that like, I don't really care what you think we're getting. Everything else, have fun with it. And I was like, yo, that's awesome. You know what you want. You know that what, because it's almost like this is the beat. Everything in the middle, make it make sense, go.
There you go.
And it was like so cool. It was like so much fun. And that's the one part where I was like, man, I really hope we get to work together again. But I think personality-wise, we probably are not a great fit to work with each other. But who knows? Hopefully in the future that'll be a thing. Yeah. But that's a great example of someone that like that I really enjoyed working with because they gave me freedom but also knew exactly what they wanted. And that was really cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think security is eyeing us right now.
Oh, that's
so
fine.
Shout
out to Calix Renault because he's another dude that is phenomenal to just like powwow with on
set. Who introduced us?
Yes, Calix Renault is the one that introduced us. He was the director on the second feature I ever did, and I absolutely loved working with this guy. It was very off the cuff. Nothing was planned because the script had, well, we lost
so
one of our...
So usually a red flag for you.
Usually a red flag, but here's the thing. In this situation, it was one of those things where we had full financing. Everything was set. It was my second feature, so I barely knew what I was doing. And for me, it was a great learning experience. And I get this. We barely get any pre. I was not even supposed to be the DP on this thing. I was going to come out on like camera PA for a week and then go another shoot. My shoot gets canceled. His DP gets jury duty. He's already in Kansas City. And he looks at me, he's like, you're the only other person I know that owns a camera, owns lenses, owns lights, and wants to shoot. Do you want to make my movie? I'm like, sure. When do we start? It's like, tomorrow. Okay. And so off the top, I already knew that it was going to be really, you know, very run and gone, very, very much like that. But the really exciting thing about it is that, like, they had a great script. I had read the script. I really liked it. It turned out that not only did that happen, we also lost one of our biggest investors. We lost over 50% of financing overnight.
Oh, wow.
Halfway through week one. And so a lot of the things that we had planned to do kind of went out the window. And it was really exciting to know that, Calix is a phenomenal writer. And he really knows what he wants. And he said he knows exactly what he wants. And the cool thing is that he knows when he doesn't know how to get it.
Okay.
And when he knows when he doesn't know. And he's really good at just being like, go do your thing.
Being able to communicate that.
Exactly. Exactly. And so we were able to just like, there were so many beautiful moments in that movie where we were just like, well, what if we did this? Well, what if we did that? Well, what if we did this? And like, it just gets bigger and gets bigger. And like, okay, how can we actually do this? Light over there. We bring the dolly. We shoot it. Let's go.
Yeah.
It was great.
I think, you know, to what you're speaking of, too, I think a lot of it has to do with confidence and maturity in the industry, too.
100%.
When
knowing your story.
When I was in San Diego, I was directing a music video. And so this was 06, 07, I think 07. And, you know, there was kind of, like, I had some rough ideas, but beyond just kind of, like, the scene, I didn't have any idea what I wanted to do angle-wise. Mm. And I relied so much on my DP and those on the set that we do something, I go, great, now what do you think we should do? Like, I literally was so green that I was like, you know what? I'm not a director. And I walked away from it for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And then when I went back to it, you know, on a project that I wish we had you on, because it was one of those weekend competitions and we were filming
this. Oh, yeah, I think you told me about that. Yeah.
But I was like, my actors were also my co-writers, and I was just giving them blocking instruction. And I'm like, when you say this line, I want you walking over here to go do this. He goes, why would my character do that? And I'm like, because I want him to.
Like, because it looks pretty, gosh darn it.
Yeah, it, like, that's blocking.
Yeah.
You know, don't be, you know, so, you know, it was kind of like just the fact that I was able to go from not having any idea what I wanted, like you said, to now being able to, like, know when to play Kate and go, okay, well, your character's motivation is this, or, and then go, because I effing want him to.
You know? Right, right.
You know, knowing when on the set to do that. And then, you know, even the short that we did do, you know, when, you know, working with an actor that was so not prepared.
Right.
And then, you know, the times that where it's like, okay, I'm trying to placate the actor, give him the lines. And then there's one time he goes, line, and I slammed my script closed in frustration and immediately remembered his line.
That's funny.
Like, it was, like, so frustrating. And then, of course, we're out in the sun and the heat, no shade, and I get sunstroke.
Oh, you know, yeah, that's right. That's right. At the,
like,
at the,
I almost died airport hangar.
That's
movie.
Right. I forgot about that.
So, but, I mean, it's, you know, I wish I hadn't walked away 10 years ago. You know, I wonder what would have been if I was like, no, this is where I was. But at the same time, kind of feel like I had to go through my journey
to know
that I could have the confidence and could have the ability to stick to creative ideas. I mean, even this setup that I actually did for another podcast, I'm like, okay, I know I don't have the money to get the mics I want, to get the board I want. I'm like, but I can do
this, looks dope.
This, and I'm like, I'm going to spend the money that I would have spent on the board on this desk. Because I'm like, I needed a sturdy enough desk, so if it shakes,
it's great.
Up the boom arm.
Yeah.
You know, I got my first table, I'm like wobbling around. I'm like, send it back to Amazon right now. You know, this doesn't fold up, but I can throw it on my cart and move it around. You know, because I'm like, you know, and really I need to spend some more money on additional cameras. Because it's a three-camera setup, but I'm like, well, I don't have
GoPros,
the money for that
man.
Now. I'm going to use my old Hero 5 for my wide shot. I think I'll use the GH5 for the guest shot, and then I'm going to set up my phone on a tripod for my shot. Yeah. And I'm like, I got to do what I got to do, but at least I know what my vision is, so I can figure out if I can't do, like, oh, just get cameras and just set it up.
Yeah.
Like, I at least know why I want three cameras.
Right.
I know what I'm doing for. I got... for my spotlight, I got a lantern globe softbox so that I can hang it above with a C-stand.
Nice.
So I can hang it above this table, and that's my main key light. And then I'll use my LED panels for fills.
I mean, right now we got some beautiful sunlight coming through.
Yeah, and this is going to look great. Vibe. This is more for, you know, setting up inside, turning out all the lights.
Right.
You know, because I'm, you know, just, but I know what I wanted. And so I'm able to now, because I've got the experience, I've got the confidence, you know, go through what I need to go through to push it, and then be able to make decisions based on that and not make decisions based on not knowing.
Right.
All right. Well, we've been going for a while.
We have.
We're getting kicked out. There.
Yes, that you
can hear all sorts of noise around us. I'm sure this is going to be a little hard
we'll
on
wrap
the thing.
It up.
I feel like we talked so fast too.
We do. We got through a lot.
Yeah, we got through a lot. So thank you for
Being
on the podcast.
100%. Thank
you
for having me.
And I can't wait to work with you again.
Ditto. I can't wait for that feature.
And we better get one of your movies in our festival.
Let's do it. I'm all about it.